Well, good morning, everyone. How are we? Good to see all of you. Just really needed that time of worship this morning. Can we thank Tom and Kate and the worship team again? That was so sweet. For those that are new or visiting with us today here at Arbor, my name is Ryan. I'm the lead pastor. It's so good to be with all of you. We are wrapping up today our three-week series studying solitude. So today's the last week of that. And in week one, we looked at the importance of solitude and how solitude is this integrated, it was a deeply integrated practice in the life of Jesus. And we defined solitude this way. Remember, solitude is intentional time in the quiet to be alone with ourselves and God. And last week, what we looked at was we looked at how these early and the first steps into solitude can feel pretty uncomfortable, pretty difficult at first as we step into solitude and its companion practices, silence and stillness. They sound great in theory. It sounds great in theory to get alone and be by ourselves and be in the quiet and spend time with God in the midst of the chaos and busyness of life. But ultimately, this is not just about some day retreat, some sort of spa time for yourself. Truthfully, listen, solitude as a practice informed by the life of Jesus is really only for the bravest of us here. It's really only for those who have the most courage to step into that space where we are willing to face all of those difficult things in our lives and in our souls and in our hearts that we have put off for months. Maybe we've put them off for years. Maybe we have put it off our entire lives, because for just about everyone here, those first few days, that first season in solitude, sitting in silence with God, can be pretty tough, can it be, right? We saw this in the story we looked at last week in the story of Elijah in 1 Kings 19. We're going to be back there again today, so if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open those up and turn to 1 Kings 19. And we looked at this story and his life, and we looked at it to observe seven different phases that Elijah went through in his solitude journey, as he journeyed into the wilderness, into the Ramos, into that solitary place. And what did we see last week? Well, what we saw in this story in the life of Elijah is that for many of us, before we can actually really engage in this practice of solitude in any meaningful way, many of us, we might first have to rest. We saw this last week, right? Elijah, before he journeyed out into the wilderness, he rested before anything else. What did he need before he was able to go out into the wilderness and wait upon God and encounter God? He needed a nap and a snack and some water, right? That's what he, and listen, for some of you, that's what you need. You need a nap. You need to rest. And I'm not talking about scrolling mindlessly on your phone with Netflix on in the background. I mean like going to bed early, put your head on the pillow before 10 o'clock, and if you're able to the next day, don't set an alarm and just sleep and just rest. Turn off the distractions, turn off the diversions, and just find some time to rest. This is what Elijah had to do before he was able to spend any meaningful time in solitude. He needed to sleep. Then from that rested place, Elijah was able to move into a time of waiting. He intentionally went into the wilderness, into the Ramos, into solitude, and slowly but surely, as he's in the wilderness, he made his way to that place of encounter. Remember, where was he going last week? Does anyone remember? Mount what? Horeb. That's right. He was going to Mount Horeb, aka Mount Sinai, a place where God encountered his people. He met Moses there. But listen, as he was going to that place, remember, he was walking for 40 days and 40 nights. He waited upon God, and he didn't hear from God at all. No dreams, no visions, no words of encouragement. He just plodded day after day through the wilderness, waiting upon God. And for many of us, that's the phase of solitude that we find ourselves in right now. After we've set aside some time to rest and we walk in this waiting period, and I think this waiting period is so valuable, and it was so valuable for Elijah because he was coming out of this season of insanity and busyness and chaos and oppression, and during this time of waiting, he was able to allow all of those experiences and the events of his life. He was able to allow his heart to sift and work through all of those things, which allowed him to do that third thing we saw last week, which was feel. He began to feel these things. And listen, emotions aren't necessarily bad. We don't want to be directed and guided just by emotions, but we also can't neglect and deny our emotions either. And in this, out of this season of waiting, Elijah came to the spot where he just started to feel these things. The depression, the despair, the isolation, the loneliness, the pain, the hurt, the betrayal. He was feeling all of these things. He was able to slow down long enough and acknowledge these things, not by himself, though, remember. He was able to, in and with the presence of God, not just feel these things, but then that fourth thing that we saw last week, he was able to what? He was able to name them. With and in the presence of God, Elijah, after resting and waiting and feeling, he was able to name all of the good and all of the bad and all of the ugly that was going on inside of your heart, inside of his heart. And listen, for some of you who over these last few weeks, you have begun this journey into solitude, maybe you've set aside 10 minutes here or 15 minutes here to spend in quiet, in stillness, in silence with God, you've slowed down long enough to quiet yourself in those moments in God's presence. But for the last few weeks, as you've done that, you're just finding that most of your time, maybe this has been your experience, that most of your time is just navigating your own chaos and busyness in your heart. Has that been your experience? Or maybe what comes to mind is just the pain or frustration or hurt. Maybe what you bring to mind are the ways that people have hurt you in the past, maybe even recently over the last few weeks, and you just call these things to mind. Maybe it's heartache and pain from years and years ago. That's what comes to mind. Maybe it's just the chaos and busyness of being a parent and all that goes along with that. Or maybe it's something in your job. You find yourself over these last few weeks as you enter into solitude and you're like, man, what I was really hoping for was peace and contentment and like this relief from the chaos and busyness. And all I feel is like I'm this huge mess in front of God. Maybe that's been your experience in these first few weeks of solitude. And listen, that's okay. Because this early journey into solitude is not, listen, I wish I could just like have like a great commercial and be like, it's amazing, you're gonna love it. But listen, the early steps are not easy. They're painful, and this is what we saw last week. It's hard work. And again, perhaps we were hoping for more of a sense of refreshment and peace in our time of solitude. And I won't read, remember last week I read that really long quote from Henry Nouwen, and it was just about how painful solitude can be. And I'm not going to reread that again, but if you weren't here last week, go back to the end of the message and listen to that quote. I think it captures a really honest and truthful sense as to what solitude is all about. It's not supposed to be some quick retreat or quick fix for the chaos and busyness of life. However, hear this. This journey into the eremos that we saw in the life of Christ a couple weeks ago, that we are watching in Elijah's life right now, is the best way for each and every one of you to come to a better understanding of who your God is, who your maker is, who you are in light of who he is, and to gain a better sense and a better perspective on what is going on in your lives, in the chaos and the busyness and the uncertainty and the unpredictability. Solitude is where we can truly find peace and rest. Ruth Haley Barton says this in her book, The Practice of Solitude and Silence. She puts it this way. Solitude and silence are not self-indulgent exercises for times when an overcrowded soul needs a little time to itself. Rather, they are concrete ways of opening to the presence of God beyond human effort and beyond the human constructs that cannot fully contain the divine. By the end of this morning, we'll see why that is so important. Listen, solitude is a practice, it's a discipline, and like most disciplines, it is not easy at first. It is painful, it is difficult. And we have to walk through some of these more painful phases in solitude, like waiting, like feeling, like naming, before we're able to go into the more sunshine and rainbows part of solitude, which we're gonna talk about this morning. How does that sound? Better, right? You're like, yes, I need some of that today. So let's jump into that. Hopefully you're in 1 Kings 19 by now. If you don't have a Bible, you can follow along on the screen. We're going to pick up right in the middle of this story that we were in last week in verse 11. It says this, "The Lord said, go out," and he's talking to Elijah, right? The Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. Look, the Lord is ready to pass by. And so remember, Elijah, he's on Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai. He is there ready to encounter God. And he has just brought before God all of his pain and heartache and depression and despair. And he's running for his life. And he's bringing this all before God. He's wrestling with all of these unanswered questions. He's imprisoned, listen, by his perspective on his situation. And he's hurting. And now here in verse 11, we see God directing Elijah. God invites Elijah out of this cave to experience him in his presence. And Elijah's desperate for this. And listen, he's longing for this encounter. And this is what so often inspires and induces our own desire to press into times of solitude. So often we are drawn into a practice like this because we are so desperate to hear from God. In the midst of our busyness, in the midst of our chaos, in the midst of the pain that we feel in life, we are just desperate to hear from God and to understand, God, what are you doing in the midst of my life right now? Can you please help me make sense of it? Or can you do something? Can you move in some way and change what's going on here? Elijah was desperate in this moment for an encounter with God. He wanted to see God move in power. And we see in the story, in ways, there are some powerful, crazy things happening. Look at the rest of verse 11. A very powerful wind went before the Lord, digging into the mountain and causing landslides. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the windstorm, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And so we have this massive storm. It's digging into the mountain. It's causing landslides. Then we have an earthquake that presumably shook the whole mountain and caused more rocks to fall. But what does the text say about these two incredible displays of power, about the storm and about the earthquake? Was God in either of them? No, he was not in either of them. And then it keeps going, verse 12. After the earthquake, there was a fire, and so we've got like earth moving and the wind and fire, and could be a good band name or something, perhaps. If you're under like 45, you probably don't get that joke, but that's okay. So there's this fire, right? But what does the text say? But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, though, there was a soft whisper. Probably sounded like that, ooh, you know, that little dinging. Perfect timing, thank you. When Elijah heard it, he covered his face with his robe, and he went out and he stood at the entrance of the cave. And so just like this, in this moment right here, just like slow down with me. It's easy to read Bible stories like this and just be like, oh, it's just a Bible story, but this happened. In some way, shape, or form, this happened to this man, Elijah. He's running for his life. His life was defined by chaos and busyness up until this point. He was trying to serve the Lord and be loyal to the Lord. And he was desperate to find, to experience this encounter with God. And he goes up on this mountain where he was expecting to meet with God. And then there's like this big storm, and there's this big earthquake, and there's this big fire. And listen, as you read through the scriptures, what you see are those are the ways in which God typically showed up. Through a storm, through lightning, through an earthquake, through fire. This is how God showed up. And yet, in this particular story, God was not in any of those things. Where was God? He was in the soft whisper. The Hebrew for that phrase right there. Your translation, if you're reading one, might read still small voice. If you're familiar with this story, you know, from like 20 or 30 years ago, that's often the translation, was a still small voice. The Hebrew here is this, listen. Kol demama daka. And that means, translated literally, a sound, a thin silence. Or listen, the sound of sheer silence. And there's something about this moment of silence right here. This moment of stillness, this soft whisper. This is the game changer for Elijah. We see here in the text that he covered his face with his robe, and it wasn't because the windstorm was still going and he was trying to protect his eyes from debris. It wasn't because the fire was raging so hot that the heat, he had to protect himself from the heat. Now, this was a moment where Elijah recognized that something had changed. The atmosphere had changed. and that God was present in that silence. And so he covers himself as this sign of humility. He approaches God and he knows, listen, God, you are so great and you are so mighty. And this moment right now is like thick with your presence. And I'm approaching you, but I know that I am not worthy to see you, to encounter you in this way. And so he humbles himself. He covers himself. He approaches God. And in this story with Elijah, this is where we start to see a shift in his life and in his disposition and in the overall trajectory of where his life goes. But as you read this story, you might think, well, I don't see that change. I don't see that transformation. Look at this next verse in 1 Kings 19. God asks him a question. He says, why are you here, Elijah? And then Elijah responds, I have been absolutely loyal to the Lord God of heaven's armies. Even though the Israelites have abandoned the covenant they made with you, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword, I alone am left, and now they want to take my life. Now, remember, if you were here with us last week, this is like deja vu, because God asked this very same question before Elijah encountered God on Mount Horeb, and Elijah answered in the very same way. And so if you're reading this story and you're anything like me, you're thinking to yourself, after Elijah encounters God in this powerful way, shouldn't his answer be different? Shouldn't his response be different? After he's encountered the Most High God, shouldn't he be like, no, Lord, now I trust you, and you are good, and you are powerful? Is anyone else there with me as you're reading the story? You're like expecting the sort of narrative arc to experience. Listen, that's not what happens. That's not what happens. Elijah encounters God in this powerful way, and then God asks him the very same question that he asked him just a few moments ago, and Elijah gives him the very same answer. And here's what I just want to share with all of you. I want you to be encouraged by this, that this is okay. That when God encounters you and meets with you in those moments of solitude and silence, he is not expecting you to put on some sort of mask and pretend that you're someone else. When God encounters you in these powerful ways, he wants who you really are. He wants you in all of your brokenness. He wants you in all of your pain and your worry and the chaos of your life. And even in that moment after you encounter God in such a powerful way, he still wants the real you. He wants you in your honesty. Listen, this is who Elijah was. He was desperate. He was lonely. He was burnt out. He was broken. And he knew, what better place to share my truest self, who I really am, than with the Most High God who is really here right now. You don't have to be anyone that you're not in front of God. God can handle any version of you. He can handle any version of you. And then God goes on. God's like, all right, cool, man, that's fine. That's the spot you're in. It's totally fine. And then he keeps going. He gives him some direction. Look at verse 15. The Lord said to him, go back the way you came and then head for the wilderness of Damascus. Go and anoint Hazael, king over Syria. You must anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel, and Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel-Meholah, to take your place as prophet. I nailed all of those names, okay? That was pretty solid, right? I was practicing that this past week. Jehu will kill anyone who escapes Hazael's sword, and Elisha will kill anyone who escapes Jehu's sword. And listen, this is a really important part right here. I still have left in Israel 7,000 followers who have not bowed their knees to Baal or kissed the images of him. And that's the story. That's the story of Elijah's kind of journey into solitude. And so I just want to use like the remainder of our time. I'm going to try to be really quick here because we have a family meeting here in like 10 minutes that I want us to get to. I just want us to look at these last three phases of solitude as we see them in the life of Elijah and what this might mean for us. And so after Elijah rests, waits, feels, and names, we then see that he finally, and I think this is what many of us are hoping and longing for when we enter into solitude, he encounters God. That's the fifth thing we see in Elijah's life. He encounters God. Verses 11 through 12, earthquakes, fires, windstorm, all of this stuff. God's not in those things, but he's in the soft whisper. It was the soft whisper that drew Elijah to the mouth of the cave. It was the quiet whisper. It was that silence that caused him to cover his face. And why? Because he knew in that moment God was there. Listen, this is the moment of solitude that I am deeply wanting each and every one of you who is trying to practice this practice of Jesus to experience. I want you to experience this experience of God, this encounter with God in a moment of solitude. Something happens, listen, after we slow ourselves down, remove all diversions, all distractions, and we unveil and expose all that's going on inside of us before a holy, awesome, loving God. We show the disappointment, we show the anger, we show the loneliness, the lust, and the hurt, all of those things. We bring them before God. And something happens when we sit with those things. The things that we tend to hide from those around us, the things that we tend to hide even from those who are closest to us. And for a moment, as we do that with God, we might even feel a sense of dread or panic that he's going to punish us for bringing those things before him. But listen, in those moments, and this isn't going to happen every single time, but trust me, this will happen as you pursue God in those times of solitude. The quiet whisper will come. It will. That thin silence. And listen, this silence is unlike any other kind of silence because it is heavy with the presence of God. He is there. And he will show up. And we will know it in the depths of our soul. And it might just be like this slight quickening in our spirit. Our heart might start to race a little bit. We might feel compelled in that moment to cry. Or to fall on our knees, or to just simply be still in the presence of God as we encounter him. Now listen, I understand that for some of you right now, this might sound strange and weird. You're like, what in the world is he talking about right now? I've never experienced that. Listen, I get that, but I'm going out on a limb and I'm sharing what I've encountered and experienced in my walk with Jesus. And as I pursue him in this practice of solitude. It's not like every single time I sit down in a time of solitude, I experience this. But I can tell you over the last 6 months, there have been two times in my life where I've encountered God in really powerful ways out of seasons and moments of feeling pain and frustration and despair, where all of a sudden, after waiting for weeks, for months, he met me in that moment. And I'm sure that there are others of you in this room that have had this kind of encounter and experience with Jesus where you sit in that moment of silence and sometimes it takes you by surprise. And he meets with you in that moment and your heart is just so full and it is so encouraged because you are encountering the Most High God. And this is something beyond words. Listen, as I've encountered God and I hear God in these ways, it's not like I'm having some sort of audible conversation with God. I've never had that kind of experience. Maybe someone in this room has, but I haven't. But these encounters that I've had with God, as few and far between as they might be, they're beyond words. Something about God's Spirit rests upon you in these moments as you've gone through these phases of solitude where you meet with God and you encounter him in a truly powerful way. I love the way that Henry Nouwen puts it. He writes this: the real work of prayer is to become silent and listen to the voice that says good things about me. To gently push aside and silence the many voices that question my goodness and to trust that I will hear the voice of blessing, that demands real effort. For some of you, I bet there's like parts of you where you're like, that quote doesn't even seem right. Like the good things about me, aren't I just like this like filthy like sinner who, no, listen, like you are beloved. You are beloved in the eyes of God the Father. He loves you, and he longs to be with you, and not some version of you. This is the voice that Elijah encountered, this voice of God, an encounter with God. And it's when we encounter and hear from God in moments like these moments we hear that we are truly loved and delighted in the middle of our mess, with all of our chaos all around us, that encounter in and of itself can provide such peace and clarity and even direction. And that's where Elijah's kind of solitude journey goes next, this next phase of direction. Elijah's time in the wilderness is brought to a close as God shares some things that are going to change and some things Elijah has to do. And another prophet that Elijah has to appoint, which like frustratingly has like just about the exact same name as Elijah, and there's Elisha. And so for hundreds of years, people are like, which one are you talking about, right? God's like, you got to appoint that guy. Listen to what Ruth Haley Barton says about this. Not the Elisha stuff, but, you know, solitude and direction. She says this: in solitude, we learn to relinquish control. oof, right? And simply be present to the one whose presence is the bedrock of our being. Given time, okay, church? Given time, we experience that loving presence as our ultimate reality. This reorientation to the ultimate reality of God's love and goodness is an important first step to receiving guidance. For only when we know the love of God in a deep experiential way can we be truly open and receptive to his will. You know what I find so interesting about the story of Elijah is that not once is he asking for guidance. He only receives guidance from God after he's been entirely open and vulnerable with the God of the universe. He's known in his brokenness and in his despair, and in that moment, God meets with him and provides him this assurance that he is deeply loved, cared for, provided for. Then God gives him direction and tells him, hey, all of these things are going to change. You're going to appoint these kings, and you're burning out, and your time has come to an end, so you're going to pass your mantle off to this other guy, Elisha. You're going to be able to re-enter in a better and different way. And listen, ultimately, that's the last thing we're going to look at here today. That's the goal of solitude. And this is really important for all of us to hear as we wrap up. The purpose of solitude is to re-enter our real lives with all of its chaos and all of its busyness with a greater sense of God's loving presence toward us, and that is the truest thing about us. Then and only then can we re-enter our lives well. And that's the last thing Elijah does. He re-enters. God prepares Elijah for re-entry. The text says to go back the way you came. Don't avoid it. Go back the way you came, because listen, Elijah, you are different. You are changed. You have encountered me. You've got a new perspective. Some things are going to be changing, but by and large, I haven't changed a single circumstance. You're re-entering your life, and you know me. You've encountered me. You've met me. There are things that need to change. There are kings that need to be appointed. But listen, you need to re-enter. The purpose of the practice of solitude is not more isolation by myself. It's not elevating experiential spirituality in my own personal life above everything else. We engage with this practice to encounter the presence of God and allow his presence to change us and change our perspective, to more clearly show us who we are and how we are to live our lives and how we are, listen, this is the most important thing, to better love other people. Our experience of solitude should propel us to re-enter our lives, better equipped, to give more of ourselves, because in those times of solitude, we receive much from God, from his presence. We are able to step forward and be conduits of God's love and his grace to those around us because we have experienced them firsthand. Thomas Merton put it this way: it is in deep solitude that I find the gentleness with which I can truly love others. Solitude and silence teach me to love others for what they are, not for what they can do or what they say. And so, listen, church, friends, there's like a lot more that I want to say about solitude. And I feel like we've only just scratched the surface over these 3 weeks. But if I could encourage all of you toward one thing, it's practice solitude. In the way that you can. We looked at this a couple weeks ago. Baby steps. 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, every day, most days out of the week. Give this a shot. Step into this. And don't be wary when you step into those moments of solitude and you're like, all I can think of are all the things I have to do. Listen, God can do amazing things in your life through this practice if you would just give it a chance and move forward patiently in it. So how about you stand with me and I'll pray. We'll close this up. Father in heaven, we thank you for your graciousness and your kindness to us through this practice of solitude and silence. And Lord, I pray that we would just begin to hear story after story of individuals in our church and in our community who are encountering you in powerful ways through solitude. Lord, we thank you that you don't want us to pretend. We don't have to be anyone that we're not. And Lord, you welcome us into your presence in all of our brokenness and all of our pain and in all of our hurt. We bring that before you, God, and we just ask that you would move in power and change us and transform us. Would we encounter you? And Lord, would you remind us, most importantly, how loved we are by you? how we are your beloved. And would we take that love with us out into the world as we leave this place, even now, God? Would we take the love that we have received and encountered this morning into our lives, into the chaos, into the busyness, into all the relationships that we will encounter today, Lord? We commit all of this to you and pray this in your powerful name. Amen.